Well, it is time for PMC Live, KFSK News, and the Petersburg Medical Center have teamed up for a monthly show called PMC Live. It's right after the Midday Magazine on the first Thursday of every month, and it focuses on different departments, new programs, and initiatives that are happening at the medical center. Today, I'm joined in the studio by Medical Center's CEO, Phil Hofstetter, along with a few people from the finance department. We have Jill Dormer, who is the Director of Fiscal Services and Informatics, and Julie Spiegelmeyer is the business office lead. Hello, everyone, and thanks for joining us.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. All right. You might want to scoot that mic a little bit closer. We don't want to miss all the important things that you have to tell us today. So today we're going to be talking about the finance department at PMC, but first I want to check in with the CEO just to get an update.
Sure.
From the medical center. How did the holidays go there?
It was my first holiday, my first holidays in Petersburg. It was wonderful. It was a great experience. Believe it or not, I don't have a lot to say on the updates right now. So that's unusual for me, but we can jump right in if you'd like to talk about finance.
So the medical center is a place that never shuts down, really.
That's true. Yep.
24/7. I mean, a lot of places, you know, at least they have off one day.
Yes. Yeah. We tried to get Christmas off. We had a Christmas party. We tried to improve morale during the holiday season. It could be a little bit on the gloomy side. We obviously have to take care of patients that are sick. So we have our ER admissions and clinic is open. We had Christmas off, and we had a half day before New Year's, and we also had a Christmas Eve off, and then New Year's Day. So, it was okay. No big crisis issues that occurred, you know. Thankfully, knock on wood. Fortunately, I don't have a lot to say on the updates. So.
Well, speaking of crisis, that word kind of triggered a response from me about that you actually had a practice run for if there would be a crisis at the medical center last talked to you last month.
Right.
That was, you know, what if there was an active shooter at the hospital? How did that go?
Yeah. So we, you know, again, it's one of those things you don't want to plan for, and sometimes you don't even want to talk about them, that how could they possibly occur? But unfortunately, violence in the workplace is really escalating. It's something that's being addressed in a lot of different facilities. So we teamed up with law enforcement, local law enforcement, and we had our wonderful emergency preparedness person, Lori, who really facilitated I would say wonderful, but it was a very clean exercise. It was a bit scary because even though we knew it was happening, we advertised, I thought, very well with the community. Thank you for radio for putting that out there as well. Still, when, you know, the actor came in to the facility, it still was scary because they had the little things that popped and you heard the sound and you know, people responded appropriately the way they should. According to the plan that was written, and you know, there's a lot of lessons learned in a drill like that. So those are things we want to debrief on, improve on. I believe in springtime there might be another opportunity with the Coast Guard to help work with them as well, because law enforcement also wants to drill these things, you know, to make sure that they are prepared, they know what the gaps are. The responses, the, you know, the timing, all those kinds of things. So, you know, from a healthcare side, I was very pleased with the staff. I learned a lot. It was much different than even the drills that I was used to were at the facility that I was at before. So I think there's a very strong team here. Lori does an amazing job with emergency preparedness. And I feel like I'm constantly learning on that, and that in a way that there's really no set answer. It's an evolving issue, so there's no real set plan. You know, you have to kind of think on your feet a little bit, and there's different response and tactics to do that. So,
all right. Well, thanks for that update.
Yeah. Jill, I suppose I did have an update.
Okay.
Thank you.
Jill Dormer, first off, let's go back to your title. Director of Fiscal Services and Informatics. What does that mean?
So obviously, Fiscal Services is all of the financial areas of the hospital. We handle the billing and collections and registration staff. There's medical records department that's excellent and keeps everything nice and tidy. The informatics piece is clinical IT. So I'm also oversee like our electronic health record. Basically everything you do as a patient that comes into the hospital or the clinic, it gets stored in the health record and sorted. And we put a lot of effort into making sure that it's usable. We can run reports off of it. We can make sure that your information's accessible to you on a patient portal, which is something I'd be really excited to talk about at another time if we did a tech department meeting for the radio. Anyway, but it's exciting. It keeps my day full and always changing, which is exciting and wonderful, and kind of love coming in every day to see what's new.
So how many people are working there for finance? And then is that also the staff for the IT part?
It's not. They're separate.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So how many?
I want to preface this just a little bit because this is actually a good example of a small community hospital where you kind of have some people in dual roles, and Jill is just one of those people. So sometimes, you know, in other facilities, you have a director of EHR and director of informatics, and that's a whole department. But, you know, we don't have, we don't have that ability in resources, or we don't have, maybe the need to have that such an expansive department. So you have a lot of Jills floating around that we're dual roles in some ways. So
yeah.
Anyway, that was just a little preface.
Yeah, wearing more than one hat there. So for the finance department hat that you wear, how many people work there?
The business office is downstairs. We have 6 employees. A couple of them are part-time, so we really have 5 FTEs. They're wonderful people, and I'm sure a lot of the community has come in and had conversations with them if they needed help with their bill. Aside from that, we have 8 registration clerks that assist as patients come into any of the departments in the hospital or the clinic. And then we have 3 medical records, oh, actually 4 now, medical record staff members. And they're responsible for just the intake of records and making sure that we're complying with all the federal laws, as well as releasing records out if people request for them to be sent out to other facilities or just their own personal use.
Okay, and then Julie, you're the business office lead.
So my role is basically to help facilitate, since Jill is wearing multiple hats, to help bridge the questions that staff may have and issues that patients may come in with. So I can handle some things and keep things rolling and kind of communicate back and forth to help keep the team going.
Julie steers the ship every single day.
Okay. Well, it sounds like there's a ton of different kinds of things that you are doing in that umbrella. But can we start with billing?
Yeah.
I think a lot of people can relate to that. They know if I go to the doctor, I'm going to pay a bill.
Right.
So how does that work for PMC?
It's interesting. I think we've tried different models throughout the years. I think we talked about this at one point, but about 5 years ago, we just made the decision to outsource our billing. And the reason we did that is we found that we just couldn't keep a large enough staff to really efficiently provide billing services to Petersburg. Things tended to fall through the cracks, or we couldn't keep up with the regulations with the amount of staff that we had because people would move away, or they'd retire, or they'd move into another department. And so what we found to be the best model is we keep a staff of 6 that act as like a quality assurance team, and they have the technical ability to interpret the bill and the claim so that if somebody walks in or calls, they have the knowledge to really interpret and help the community or the patient. But then what we've done is we've outsourced the actual claims generation and the follow-up and the statement generation and also the collections. And just having done that, there's a nominal fee that goes along with that so that we can keep our costs low. But we're able to really provide a lot more to the community with the staff that we have because I feel like we're utilizing it in the best way possible.
Mm-hmm. In some ways, it may be some people might not even know that you're outsourcing because
right.
You can talk to a real person when you call. You can pay your bill over the phone or in person.
Yeah, and that seems really important to the patients that we've talked to, and we discussed outsourcing in the beginning, that was very clear that that was something that the community wanted. And so we've tried really hard to strive to make sure that they're not inconvenienced by having to call a 1-800 number and talk to somebody that they don't know, or who maybe isn't able to give them a quick answer.
About billing, there, I don't know if it's common with other hospitals, but there's like a discount for people if you pay your bill on time or early, a bit early.
Yes.
I don't know if that's kind of standard procedure.
I don't
remember it where I used to live, but.
Yeah, you can do incentive discounts in a few different ways. There are some rules that we have to abide by, so we're careful. But we love the prompt pay discount, which basically is if you get your statement in the mail, which everybody has if they've had a service, if you pay within 45 days of the date that's listed on the top of your statement, you get a 20% prompt pay discount. It seems to be pretty popular with the residents in Petersburg, and we're happy to offer it because it does seem to keep things sped up and quick. Along the same lines, if somebody goes into the office visit or goes in for an office visit and they've already met their deductible for the year and they just have their copay for their office visit, if you pay that at the time of service, you'll never hear from us again. You won't get a statement in the mail. It speeds things up. It makes it a lot more efficient. And then we're not tracking people down for $20 later and, you know, bothering them over something that they could just pay at the time of service.
Is there anything you want to add, Julie, about billing?
Where to begin?
Anything that, you know, just the general public out there might find interesting that they might not know, or questions you get asked a lot.
One thing I know we get a lot of feedback on is sometimes it takes a while for between when somebody comes in to when they might get a statement. And we always tell them, and you know, in a perfect world, sometimes we see things that bill out and are paid within a few weeks if the insurance company doesn't have any questions, there's no problem with the code, easy. We're not even allowed to check on the status of a claim most of the time until 45 days after we've submitted it. So if there is a problem, it can take a little bit of time between us fixing it and then resubmitting it before everything comes and you finally do get your bill. And people will always get their explanation of benefits, which is what the insurance company is telling them. That's a communication from what we've submitted to what the insurance company has done. So that's kind of another thing to keep your eye out for. If you've received an explanation of benefits, that's telling you what's going on. And then shortly thereafter, if there's no problem, a statement should come out. And we always encourage people, if they do have a question after they get their EOB, to come in, and we're more than happy to look over it. And sometimes, you know, there's electric systems and boxes and things that need to be checked and unchecked, and we find, oh yeah, this is ready to go. We can take care of this, or this is something that needs a little more work, and we're working on it. So
it sounds like you're sometimes waiting on insurance as well.
Often,
There's a kind of a middleman there. The insurance company has to go through them, and
they get
how much are they going to be involved? And
they get to kind of steer a lot of that. Actually, you know, we can be as on top of it and get something out right away, and they can hold things for a while and ask for records sometimes, like Jill was saying, or clarification on a code, and there's a lot of communication that has to happen back and forth.
So with the billing, you started to mention and talk about people who, you know, they're not sure they understand what they're reading on their statements. You can help them with that. There's
absolutely
people to do that.
We encourage people to call in if they're not comfortable calling our outsourcing company. They can come in with their explanation. They can call. We are there to help and are happy to do so.
Yeah, and it's something that we're actually trying to kind of cultivate and develop as a team. There are certifications that you can be educated for financial counseling that's really specifically relates to the medical field. And so we've talked about that as a team, and we're offering that to a few of our interested employees that want to go through that program in the next year. And then we'll be able to actually bulk up the services that we're able to offer to residents in Petersburg, that they could come in and we could help them fill out Medicaid applications. They can come in and we can help them with more of a financial planning for their hospital stay. How are you going to pay for this once you're discharged? We have a lot of services that we're able to offer where if somebody has a bill that they're not able to pay at the time of service, that, you know, we have financial assistance, we have payment plans, and actually Julie handles a lot of that in the office. You might be a better person to kind of go through the details of that.
Sure. So the pay plans are one of the options. Anytime somebody can't pay something within a few months, it's actually pretty standard in a lot of facilities that if you don't pay it, you're going to either get sent to collections or you have to put an account on terms. And we have interest-free, which is really nice. Some places actually will charge you interest on your pay plan. But anything that you're not feeling comfortable with, that you can't take advantage of that prompt pay discount, that is going to take you a little while, we'll put that account, those accounts or account into a payment plan. And basically, instead of having to juggle multiple payments and splitting them out between individual admissions, everything's going to one spot. You know what your monthly payment's going to be. And anytime you need to update it, all they have to do is ask, say, you know, I'm getting a statement that's got a number that's not my payment plan. Let us know. We can add a new account and update the plan. So we really want to work with everybody to make sure that it's, as you know, not a burden. We want to work with people, and as long as they're working with us, we keep things moving along, and it's been really well received. I know a lot of people when I first started working were frustrated, and it's smoothed out a lot, just understanding, you know, how we can help.
So if somebody has a $2,000 bill as a family, they can pay that in pieces.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you're saying with
Absolutely.
No interest.
Yep. And it's there's formulas depending on what the total balance is, what that monthly payment would be. But we also always have the ability to structure that if the payment is over what somebody is comfortable in their budget, we can ask for approval for a lesser payment. And that also segues into financial assistance. Sometimes you can keep chipping away, but it's just not really working. We also offer financial assistance. It's on our website, thepmcak.org. You can access and review the policy and fill it out there. All of our registration centers have the packets, so clinic, up at the ward clerk, down at the business office, and we're there to help answer questions. But basically, it's filling out some information, and you know, anything from 20% to 100%, depending on what your situation is available. And a lot of people think that they're not eligible for it, and I'm always like, the worst anybody can ever say is no, and you'd be surprised. You can say yes, and we try to say yes. And if something extenuating is going on, it's, you know, you make good money, things are fine on paper, but something massive is going on in your life, they write up an explanation, that's considered. And I don't think everybody's necessarily aware of that, so I'm hoping people out there are listening and will talk to us about it, because we want to help.
Seems like the key is seeking that help, you know. Residents, patients going to the medical center and saying, you know, hey, can you help me check this out? Mm-hmm. Because you're not just calling up people who have bills out there to check on them. They need to come to you to say, hey, what are my options? Are there other options?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Seems like that could be extremely daunting for a family that has a big medical thing happen. Excuse me. Because it's not something that people are just born knowing mm-hmm. all the paperwork that's involved and what resources are out there to help them. They wouldn't be an expert in that, and then all of a sudden there's something that happens medically, and where do they start? Mm-hmm. You know, how do they navigate that world of forms and things like that?
Right. And we are really fortunate. We have a staff that's knowledgeable, and they keep up on regulations, and when people come in and they do ask for help, they're very patient. We have very, very patient and kind staff in the business office that really, like Julie just keeps saying, they want people to come in and ask for help, because that's why they're there. It, you know, gives them satisfaction and purpose in their work, just to know that they're able to help someone else that is in need.
Did you have something to add?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I think is really important, I think, you know, healthcare, insurance, claims, costs are difficult. I think they're frustrating. I think they're hard to navigate, and they're complicated. Healthcare is expensive, any way that you look at it, to run a facility or to receive treatment from a facility. So, you know, we are fortunate here at PMC to have such a dedicated staff. One of the things that the department's doing is to really do some outreach and do financial counseling. And it may not mean that you can't pay. It's just what resources are available that are out there. You know, there's so many different options. There's so many things to navigate. You know, how can we help? I mean, it's part of our strategic plan is really doing more outreach and improving transparency, mm-hmm. and making finance a real big part of that, because that's what people think about when they come to a facility. Oh, how much is this bill going to be? Oh, I got to go to the ER. How much is that going to be? You know, those are real questions. The thing about a small community hospital is that we feel those questions as well as staff members, because we go to the same facility. And even in what's really crazy to me is even as a part of a healthcare organization and as being part of it for so many years, it's still difficult to navigate my own personal insurance claims and healthcare. What's the copay here? Why am I getting this EOB? What does that mean? Did they pay that or did not pay that? So it's important to develop that with the community, and we have some great staff that are doing that.
All right. Well, talking about, you know, things being expensive, Jill, when I talked to you earlier, you were telling me about something that you have online where people can go to see how much procedures cost.
Yes.
I was unaware of that. But
yeah. Well, and it's actually it's a new process. So CMS, which is the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which kind of governs a lot of facilities, if you take in Medicare or Medicare money, then you have to comply with their regulations, and we do as a facility. They have a new measure that is asking for facilities to put their top 60 most utilized services online for patients to see. It's called price transparency. And it's not just the top 60, actually, it's over six CPT code classes. So there's like pharmacy and professional fees, which would be anytime you see a physician. There is surgical items. There's laboratory and radiology, missing one. But basically, we list out the top 10 in each of those categories so that a community member can go on and see how much is my clinic visit going to cost. And we've actually gone a little above and beyond that. We have posted in our clinic, you can see what, you know, all the different office level visits will cost. Keep in mind that when you look at those on the website, that they're a gross estimate. Some of the services are time-based, so it kind of gives the initial, your first 15 minutes will be this, and then any incremental after that. So it's not always an exact quote, but more of an estimate based on what, you know, the minimum will be or the starting point will be. What I have been able to do, because other facilities are also needing to do this to comply with the CMS regulation, is I've been able to go on and see that our emergency room visits and our clinic office visits are actually at the median or just barely below other Southeast hospitals or medical centers. And so that's good for us to know as a facility that we're not charging more than we need to. We generally price things at a point where it's above cost for us to be able to keep staff, but we're trying to also keep especially preventative services like emergency room and clinic office visit where you see your primary care physician. We're trying to keep those affordable because we want people to seek care when they need it.
And when we're talking about online, it's your website, yep. PMC's website. Yep. That's where the list of procedures are and how much each of them cost.
That's exactly right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be kind of, the website itself seems to be growing the last few years.
It does. We're working on that. We're trying to use it as a means to communicate with the public because it seems like the easiest, you know, point to do that. And I know Kelsey, who's not on the microphone but standing behind us, does a really good job with our website and community education.
We're talking about community and, you know, there's community cafes that are that you've started. And
I got an update for that.
You do? Okay. Well, and the community cafes, it's just a kind of a platform where people can come and talk to you as staff, right? You're mm-hmm. gathering input from the community about the direction they'd like to see the medical center go. Yeah.
Yeah. So the community cafe is another opportunity to have transparency and obtain community feedback on what they want to see for services, for example, or talk about finance, which is, I think, a difficult topic to handle because it really directs patients in in unanticipated costs. So, so we anticipate having a conversation like that. It's a focused topic. You mentioned technology. One of the things that I really like to do at the next Community Cafe is talk about technology, talk about some of the services that we're planning on delivering through telehealth, for example. We received a new portable X-ray, digital X-ray that we talked about here with our radiology department or imaging department. Received some of the funding from Rasmussen, and we want to showcase that to the community. And we also want to obtain some feedback. We don't want to just provide some of these services in a vacuum. Often, healthcare facilities have good intentions, and I've experienced this many times where you say, hey, this sounds good to the community, and you don't really provide or obtain feedback from the community, whether number one, it's desired, or number two, if it's if the model of delivery is a good one. So, it's like price transparency. We're really trying to deliver care with community feedback in mind as we do that, to what's the best for Petersburg to deliver those kinds of services. Telehealth sounds great, but what is the model? What specifically is the model? And is it a reduced cost? Is it improved access? Is it consumer-driven? Those are all things that the community can have an opportunity to say.
Is the next Community Cafe set? Scheduled?
I don't have a set date, but okay. I believe at the end of January is what I'm looking for. And what I'd like to do is, with these cafes as they go on, is to summarize the previous cafe. And I'd like to develop a better model, learn from the previous one and develop a better model, and have some community engagement as well. But I don't have a date yet, but you'll be the first to know as soon as I do.
Okay. Anything else that we want to touch on, let the public know about that we haven't discussed yet? Now is your chance. Finance department.
I think we gave you a really good overview, and thank you for having us on today so that we could reach out and talk to Petersburg.
If I had to pick one message, I would say, your door is open for patients and community members who might have questions about finance and their billing, the bills they get in the mail, that mail they get from PMC and the insurance and all that. It doesn't hurt to go to the finance department at PMC and ask what their options are, and
absolutely,
if you can help them understand what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Without doubt, yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and talking about everything, and we'll see you at the next PMC Live.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
All right.